From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. My guest this week is a stupefying beauty and one of the great comic actresses of television, film, and the Broadway stage. She's a Tony Award winner. She was Catwoman for 2 seasons on Batman and helped make that show a pop culture phenomenon. Her brilliant 1964 series, My Living Doll, has just arrived on DVD. And she is the author of a new book of philosophy and beauty tips called The Conscious Catwoman Explains the World. You guessed it, Julie Newmar. Welcome to From the Bookshelf.
What a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for asking me.
You added, that does not compute to our vocabulary.
So I did, or some clever writer.
Well, that must have been some difficult acting to play Rhoda the Robot on My Living Doll.
It was, yes, the most difficult of my career, I would say. How do you be a piece of machinery and get away with it?
I've seen machinery, but I've never seen machinery stacked up quite like that with Bob Cummings. So.
I think the wrong part of me gets credit sometimes.
Well, actually, I want to ask you about that. Mm. You know, so much, and your comedy is so great, and I've been watching a lot of your old appearances. I saw you on playing a maid on Sergeant Bilko and stupefying Jones in Little Amber. So much of it is based on sex and you're being a sort of a sex object. Did that bother you?
Never thought of it that way.
Well, good.
Never thought of it that way. I think my body did grow up before my mind got used to what the effect of my body had on a few other people.
You were, is it, well,
but don't forget, I'm tall.
You're very tall.
So then you get ahead of yourself when you'd rather be quiet and dressed in black and not noticed and just let other people make the mistakes first. That's what happens when you're first born sometimes.
Well, how old were you when you started turning heads and realized that you were gorgeous?
I think I was in high school, but that was, I would have been 13, 14, mm-hmm. and 15. I graduated then and didn't comprehend any of that, of course. But there was something that did help me get through that kind of stage where teenagers on television at least come across ill-tempered. No, what could have been ill-tempered for me was the kind of dance that I did. I studied all kinds of dance, but Spanish or flamenco was a wonderful kind of physicality that allowed the changes of the body and the growth of the mind going through puberty and all to be in a safer realm. In flamenco dancing, you're pounding the floor with your wonderful shoes, and at the same time your arms and hands are reaching more heavenward. So I guess you're going in two directions at once.
Was that your entry into show business? You were a dancer first?
Yes, that was my great love, dance.
Where were you raised?
In Los Angeles, in Los Feliz. Mm. Yes, my father was a teacher, a professor, well, engineering, but he was head football coach at Los Angeles City College when things were quieter. And my mother was in the Ziegfeld Follies.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you had roots in both New York and Los Angeles.
Kind of a stretch, yes.
And so when you first made your debut as a professional, was that in L.A. or New York?
Not really. I danced. I was a prima ballerina, as if at 15 you and unpaid you could be such, in the Los Angeles Opera Company at the Ebell Theater.
Is that that's still there, isn't it? The Ebell Theater.
Oh, it is indeed. Yes.
And then you went to New York.
Not right away. I started in films as a dancer and something called Serpent of the Nile, in which they painted my body gold and did these...
Was that uncomfortable, having your body painted gold?
No, it really got into the newspapers because they developed some kind of cosmetic that whereby the patient didn't die. And there I was.
I wonder who had the job of painting you gold. And...
Well, this master makeup artist and his assistant. There I stood for 45 minutes.
That's a good job.
Well, they painted most of my body, yes.
Oh, yeah. And you were also in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, one of the classics.
Ah, yes, a classic. So nice to see that it's always people refreshingly say, oh, that's my teenage daughter's favorite film, or that stays in history, I'm happy to say.
It's a wonderful film.
And a
landmark film. I think.
Yes.
Yeah. For dance, certainly. I mean, a new way of looking at dance in movies before West Side Story or any of those.
It had a powerful story: the rape of the Sabine women, the seven brothers, what they stole, these seven young ladies, and they set it in the mountains of, where did we go? Idaho. Mm. I didn't get to go, but that's how it happened. And we went up, and they took us in this wagon up to a place, and then this snow fell, and we couldn't get out, and our parents couldn't rescue us. And oh, it's delightful. Not as I tell it, but it's wonderful musical.
Mm. And you were on Broadway.
Ah, yes. Mother said, if you make it on Broadway, you've made it. So, indeed, when you notice on Broadway, there's all those talent scouts, and you fly out to California and do a television show or a movie. I did a movie called The Rookie, of all things, with Tommy Noonan and Peter Marshall.
Uh-huh.
And so I would keep an apartment on both sides of the coast, you see.
Yeah.
And, but Broadway is, yeah, that's the favorite place.
And you won a Tony Award?
I did, with the help of some certainly better talent than I.
Oh, well,
wonderful director, wonderful writer, Leslie Stevens. Listen to this. The co-stars were Charles Boyer and Claudette Colbert. You had to live up to those standards.
Well, was it exciting for you to meet Charles Boyer and Claudette Colbert?
When you're young, excitement isn't the same as looking back at it.
Oh.
But indeed, I was in great company, and heads of state would come backstage, movie stars, people would... Oh, it was a lovely experience for one whole year at the theater on 45th Street.
And were you there to accept your Tony? A lot of people weren't, I guess, but...
Oh, yes. It was whispered in my ear that I'd better be there because something really good might happen. Show up, please.
Uh-huh. Now, you did a dialect, and so many of the films and things you've done dialects. You used a dialect in that show, too, right?
Not a dialect. Well, you could call it that. I was supposed to have been a Swedish girl who came over from Sweden and wanted Charles Boyer, the character that he played, to father my child.
Uh-huh.
As Swedes, actually my great grandmother's Swedish, so
oh.
And for me it was an easy thing to do because dialects and it's just music to the mind.
Yeah.
And I studied piano from the age of 5, so
do you still play?
Unfortunately I don't.
Yeah.
I wish I did, but my son became deaf about 22 years ago, and I used my hands to learn sign language.
Mm. Yes. Well, let's see. I've seen you be a Russian in.
You have.
Yes, you were a Russian with Rowan and Martin in the Maltese Pippi, one of the great films in the history of Hollywood, I'm sure.
Oh, now don't lie to the audience.
Oh,
and they'll write you letters.
And I saw you. I saw you do your Swedish thing, not only in the movie with with James Mason, but you were a Swedish maid on Get Smart.
Yes, and a French maid here, there, and the other, and an Indian with blonde wig. I'm all sorts of bizarrenas in show business.
Yeah. And you add something to all the shows that you were in, but I guess My Living Doll, the one that's just come out on DVD that I'm in love with again. I loved it then, by the way.
Golly.
Well, because by the time you were Catwoman, I already knew, oh, it's Julie Newmar. You were so great in My Living Doll. It's such a funny program. And that was the only show, I guess, you ever really was that was built around you.
Yes, at least the title was built around me. It had an unusual history. It was in black and white, you know, and when I see it today, they just sent me a nice stack of the first 11 shows. Black and white photography was, in many ways, I think, more beautiful than what we're looking at today. It appealed to our imaginations more, the lighting, the shadowing, the richness. You looked with your imagination at black and white and helped reveal the story to yourself. Here, when you see too much detail as they have in these new cameras, and if it's badly lit, oh my God, then your mind goes to minutia rather than the guts of the meat of the story. So I really liked what I saw.
Well, we'd love to see you in 3D, Julie Newmar. But we do that is a very charming show, My Living Doll, and
great premise.
It's you're a robot that is, but really what you are is a newborn baby.
Thank you. Yes, some dumb people think it's sexist, but it isn't at all, because after all, the robot Rhoda had an IQ of over 200. And poor old Bob Cummings, who was the psychiatrist, I won't give a number on it, but trying to tell her to, you know, dust the house or stay in line, and, you know, things kind of got reversed. But that's what comedy's about. It's about certain conflicts.
It seems to me the show could have gone on and on.
It could have gone for years.
The Bewitched and the I Dream of Jeannie and all those shows were all around the same time, right?
All came out of The Living Doll. It was originally called The Living Doll. Bob Cummings wanted to call it his Living Doll, but CBS compromised with My Living Doll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it could have gone on and on.
He was the Living Doll, you know.
Right.
I thought he was.
But you were on, I don't know, you had bad competition. I mean, it was a very well-received critically.
Competition. We had the country's biggest competition in Bonanza.
Right.
When the show came on, it came on at 8 o'clock on Sunday night. Well, who was going to watch The Living Doll if Bonanza was on and all that color and excitement, you see? So it got off to a back seat, I'd say a rumble seat of a start. But it deserves to be seen again, and I hope people look at it. And
you know, I'll tell you an interesting thing. If you look at an episode of Bonanza, those shows, they look very static, and they're on a sound stage, and it's not a good show. It doesn't hold up well at all. There were a lot of great westerns, like Gunsmoke and so forth, but Bonanza is not one of them.
You're making me very happy.
My Living Doll is a much better show.
You.
And for that matter, it's a better show than either Bewitched or I Dream of Jeannie.
Many people have said that, yes. Its originality, it's very original.
And it had Julie Newmar in it.
Well, I tell you, it took me 13 shows before I got the inside works, you know, the dynamism that to say the words and play the part, it would come from a real place instead of just, okay, now you have to move here and do that. It was a real force of against my nature to understand anything this unreal.
Well, you may say that, but there's a scene in an earlier episode, one of the, I don't know, was the first or the second one, where you're in the hospital with Ellen Corby in the bed next to you, and you do a hysterical scene where you mimic all the things that she had said to you.
Oh.
Well, how you feeling?
Just wonderful. Nothing hurts.
Well, then what are you doing here?
I can't locate that in my memory bank. All I can remember was I was in this restaurant, and now another room, and now this one.
A restaurant? Oh, well, then it's undoubtedly ptomaine poisoning you've got.
Ptomaine poisoning?
I'd sue the restaurant.
Sue the restaurant?
Of course, it could be your liver. Oh, have I had liver trouble? But then what haven't I had? Gallstones, bad kidneys, ulcers.
Gallstones, bad kidneys, ulcers.
Yeah, well, you name it, I've had it. Everything from migraine headaches to swollen joints. In all my life, I haven't had one healthy day.
One healthy day?
The doctor thinks I'm a hypochondriac. What does he know? I've got pains I don't even have places for.
Yes, I was waiting, Doctor, because I didn't wish to enter without your authorization.
I'm glad you understand my position, Doctor.
Please.
I didn't mean to be harsh, Doctor, but the insurance company wanted to be sure as to the liability of the restaurant.
Oh, yes, I wouldn't have it any other way. As a matter of fact, if such is the case, I wanted to stay right here in the hospital.
Well, I see she's with it again.
You'll forgive me if I'm not surprised, Doctor. Mental, all mental.
How are you feeling?
Ptomaine poisoning, I've got.
What is it? What was that?
I should sue the restaurant.
Sue the restaurant? Rhoda.
Well, in that case, Doctor, I don't think I can release it.
Doctor, please, if you...
I'll have to run some tests on you for ptomaine.
Of course, it could be my liver. Liver trouble.
What?
Oh, has she had that? Oh, yes.
But then what haven't I had? Gallstones, bad kidneys, ulcers. You name it, I've had it. Migraine headaches, swollen joints.
Hangman, of course.
I haven't had one healthy day. My doctor says I'm a hypochondriac. But what does he know?
See what I mean, Doctor? Worst kind of hypochondriac. Of course, if you still feel that the restaurant is liable...
Oh, no, Doctor. You can take her. Please. Just sign a release. Your diagnosis was amazingly accurate, Doctor. Amazing. I think I'll go and lie down.
Thank you.
Well, I want to ask about, I guess, the role you're most famous for, which is Catwoman. And the first question I want to ask is, why did you stop being Catwoman? Because Batman continued without you for a season.
You got to ask the producers. They went into the second season. Instead of being an hour-long show, it was half-hour shows. And I think they got scared, and they brought in Batgirl.
Yeah.
And they changed the nature of the show. As a proper excuse, it was quite expensive to do. But, you know...
Well, they had Catwoman, they just didn't have you. So you would have continued...
Well, but then they had... Eartha Kitt.
Right. Oh, she's marvelous, but, you know, she's not you. She's about 4 feet tall. You're 8 feet tall.
Yes, she's a dancer and a wonderful singer.
She was wonderful.
And she brought a different element, and... well, I'm for changing things. I'm for... new things. I think it's very wonderful that Catwoman remains such a desirable part for an actress to play, and probably in history or in the next decades, or it will be played many times.
It's odd that particular show is not on DVD, and I guess it's because Warner Brothers owns Batman and 20th Century Fox owns the show or something.
That's
like that.
Right. Families fighting ownership. Mm-hmm. That's the whole reason you don't see it. Although it is on Hub TV.
Oh, it's around, yeah.
It's so, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I get fan mail from, Indonesia, wherever, Russia.
Really? You still get Catwoman fan mail?
Oh, yes. That's probably 80% of the attention I get, yes.
After Batman, you did a number of wonderful things, and one of our favorite movies is McKenna's Gold.
Oh,
we like that picture.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's a scene of you swimming.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Some Playboy
Yeah, that's
photographers
right.
Hid themselves in the bushes and took pictures.
I've studied the May 1968 issue of Playboy or anything, but...
Well, they could get away with it in those days. Yeah. No one told me about this or what was going on.
You didn't know you were going to be in Playboy?
Oh, heck no.
You would have said no.
Well, in the early days, the prettier girls in the chorus were asked to do the press or be photographed, you know, standing in front of an ice cream machine or something in order to bring attention to whatever musical or show they were in. So I was kind of a, oh yeah, there they go again, kind of reaction. But nowadays, I think it's different. But you'd have to know about such a thing.
I read on your website that you avoided doing nudity in pictures, still pictures, because you didn't want to be in men's magazines.
It didn't matter. Wrong answer here. you're still in men's magazines.
Yeah.
And
like Playboy.
I don't have the power to be in other people's minds, so I might as well just enjoy it, kind of. Say thank you. Thank you, God. Or thank you, Mother. Thank you.
Well, is it in McKenna's Gold? Was that's the film that you did a nude scene? Is that the only time you did that?
Oh, I was in a lovely film in London, which never got finished, with the divine and wonderful Zero Mostel.
Ah. Oh, yes, there's a little picture
of you in your book. It was called Monsieur Lecoq. Never mind. Yes, he wrote much of it. And for the first 2 weeks of filming, we were in a huge black marble bathtub, which the marble was painted on, so it sort of came off. And the water had a lot of Badidas. That's a German foam bubbles to keep your body nice and moist, you know, 8 hours in the bathtub. It was fun. It was beautiful. I'm so sorry that film was never finished, because I got to play all of his lovers, all of his sweethearts in the film.
It was
quite
brilliant.
A juicy opportunity for me, but sadly it didn't happen.
Oh, that's too bad, because he's such a brilliant comedian.
Oh, yes. Mad and crazy, and I love people like that. It's very easy for me to work with the most outrageous talents.
I saw him in Fiddler on the Roof, as millions of others did. But I also remember once he was guest hosting on the Dick Cavett Show.
Uh-oh.
And one of his guests was Paul Prentice. And he was so obscene that they not only bleeped him, but they actually blacked out the...
Wouldn't you like to see that again?
Yes, I really would.
Because now it doesn't matter anymore. It's just the zaniness and the genius that he had and that Paula Prentice had.
Yeah, she was beautiful.
Oh, she was so brilliant. Oh, my goodness. She reminded me of Kay Kendall, the English comedian.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So brilliant.
I want to ask you about a few other things that you did. You were on so many great television shows, kind of just making an appearance and sparkling them up. I mentioned Get Smart. You did a Columbo that I love. Columbo, I think, is one of the great series of all times.
Yes.
Did you have fun doing that with Peter Falk?
No.
No?
Yes, I did. Of course I did. We shot it in a mansion, which is right up the street from where I live in Carmelina. I live in Brentwood, and Marilyn Monroe lived about 5-10 houses down from me. And right up, if you go all the way up Carmelina to the top of the mountain, that house was owned by, it was a beautiful place to shoot this film, this mystery, this wild and crazy Peter Falk show.
You have a funny scene with him where you're standing on your head.
Yes. Yes.
It's lovely. It's wonderful.
I don't watch all that old stuff.
Oh, I do. Apparently.
Well, you're famous for your research and your smarts.
Well,
and your good questions.
Oh, thank you. Let's talk a little bit about the Conscious Catwoman.
explains life on Earth. You left out the rest of the title.
I'm sorry. The Conscious Catwoman Explains Life on Earth by Julie Newmar.
Yes. I had to add that part, that bit, that other bit, because it's tongue-in-cheek.
Yes.
I think, a bit.
Well, it's a lovely book, and it's filled not only with your beautiful words, but incredible pictures. These are just some wonderful pictures of you that I've been staring at.
You don't
want
to disappoint.
Well, you don't.
People don't like to read. They can look at pictures.
Because there's a lot of pictures.
Yes.
and you still look absolutely stunning. Now, I know the main tip, if someone were to ask you how to be so beautiful, you would have to say, well, first you have to be born incredibly beautiful.
Well,
but then what? How is it that you're still so gorgeous?
I had a wonderful mother, and she understood beauty. Being in the Ziegfeld Follies, she was around it. She was with Ziegfeld.
Yeah.
She would never let me go out in the skin to get a tan.
No.
Now I'm suffering from skin cancer of the face. Can't explain it, but what the heck?
Even though you never had any sun?
No. But I did fall asleep under a sun lamp the day before we shot all the pictures for Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. So maybe that affected the certain layers of the skin. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother gave me probably the life that she didn't have an opportunity in her day to live. All the dancing lessons that she would have had, piano lessons. I later studied opera for 8 years. So in the arts, I got trained, okay?
Yeah.
But beauty, in a way, in a sense, is sort of my business.
Mm-hmm.
And today, even though I don't dance, what I do, in the sense where beauty means the most to me, I have this gorgeous garden. It's like a piece of choreography of nature, of the best of the best. I mean, delphiniums that are 7 feet tall and baskets in front of me with all kinds of beautiful things. Orchids. I have thousands of orchids right outside my office door here. It's so pretty.
So surrounding yourself with beauty helps keep you beautiful?
Yes, but you have to want it or create it or like to live in it or like it to be represent you. I like it when people come to my home and say, oh, this place is wonderful. I like to design and do anything artistic. I think if you have one talent in the arts, you probably have the rest. Just have to work at it.
Which is interesting because you were never really a writer before, but now you're a writer? Or did you always write?
I think out of desperation, trying to figure out life itself and what it meant and who I am. I remember having the worst experience of my life at one of those group therapy sessions.
Yeah.
There must have been 30 people in the circle all saying who they were. And when it got to me, people said to me, and I could feel it now into the pit of my stomach, after me telling them all the things and shows I'd done, this, that. And someone said to me, yes, but who are you? So maybe I had to get really, really quiet and go to the inside place and start all over again and birth or rebirth myself and listen inside instead of always outside to what people wanted to see me do. And so we have these extra decades in life that we can live,
mm-hmm.
since the last century of good medicine and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the time and the luxury to explore ourselves instead of live it the way the world thinks we think they want it. And so the book is kind of not an expose, but it's really a high end looking book at an affordable price. And I think that you give it to your daughter, or it'd be a good teaching tool for young people coming up, not just in theater, but in life itself. You get stuck. You know, sometimes you're just too good at something, some career or some way of thinking,
and then
there's nowhere else to go. The kind of bleakness hits you, and you fall down, and out of your embarrassment, you see a new way to renew and live life. I have a wonderful thing that I tell tall girls. Tall girls don't slump. Think of how many short guys out there would love to have your offspring. Stand up for them.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, when you look back at the pictures in this book, do you relate to them? Do you think that's me, or is that somebody else?
Both.
Yeah.
It's, yes. I like them. They're beautiful. Oh, the photographer was very good. And yes, I think it's good to put nice pictures of yourself around your house. It can lift you up from, I do that. In the beginning, I wouldn't have a single picture, but now, I don't know, life marched on. There's more past than there's going to be future in this lifetime, so I have to be...
Embrace it and love it.
Yeah, I have to be really in tune with what I can have now. And I don't march to anyone else's drum, just the one I hear.
My guest is the lovely Julie Newmar. Her book is called The Conscious Catwoman Explains Life on Earth. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf. We really appreciate it.
I'm so pleased. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll come back and see us again next time. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org, subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, or find us on Facebook. I want to thank our guest, the lovely Julie Newmar, for being here. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thank you, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.